through the day. The
job Blog Talk Radio.
Put a quick search on Grainger.com and Rob found his part. With same-day pickup at his local branch, he and his crew got the job done, safely and on time. Get supplies and solutions for every industry with real-time product availability. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your Alternative Talk weather outlook for Tuesday. Steady skies again today. High temperatures around 77, 78 degrees. Tonight, clear skies and cool. Low temperatures dropping back down to about 57. For Wednesday, Thursday, and running up to the weekend, more sunshine expected. High temperatures in the upper 70s to low 80s. Mostly clear skies through the overnight. Lows hovering in the upper 50s.
Hi, it's comedian Darren Streblo. Do you have any weird friends? All my friends are weird. But then again, they're all comedians. And not only that, they're all clean comedians. Join me and my unusual friends every Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on Alternative Talk 1150 for the nation's premier clean comedy talk show, the Darren Streblo Comedy Show. Laughter is the best medicine, and we've got your dose. Sunday mornings at 7 right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Welcome to a fabulous segment. I want to take a moment, and, you know, many of us have parents, grandparents that, you know, were part of what we know as World War II. World War II. And as my uncle would say to me, you had to be there to appreciate it. And yet we live in a pop culture where we've seen so many movies, so many documentaries on what it was like. But what is it about those men and women that stood their ground for us in that war? What was it about them? How much do you actually know about the people that have been, how should I say it, honored and revered for the things they've done? Today, Dr. Brian Mark Rigg is joining me here today, and we are going to talk about the last World War II Medal of Honor recipient. What do you think this individual may have done?
Well, you know, the Medal of Honor is the highest medal for valor that our nation bestows on a serviceman or woman for going beyond the call of duty. And to kind of put it into context, just in World War II, you know, we had 16.3 million people who served our nation during World War II, and only around 480 got the Medal of Honor. Mm. And in the Marine Corps, which we'll be talking about because that's where Woody Williams served, you had 669,100 Marines during World War II, and only 82 got the Medal of Honor. And so, you know, it is a very elite group. These people have to do extraordinary actions in order to get it. And once they get it, in American lore, in American society, American military, they get pushed up to Mount Olympus of military gods and heroes in our nation. I mean, if these people walk into a room, even if they have the rank of, like, sergeant, like Woody did at the end of World War II, generals are supposed to stand up and salute, and they salute the medal. The medal takes on a life of its own, and it's symbolic of the sacrifice of whatever campaign those people were a part of, and they become spokesmen for the men and women who can no longer speak, who gave the ultimate sacrifice. So this medal has deep, deep significance for what it represents as far as freedom is not free, you know, these men and women, they went into harm's way and they helped their comrades and they did extraordinary things that pushed the campaign that they were most, you know, most likely in to victory. And so there's a lot of things that kind of like surround the Medal of Honor that people need to be aware of and why it is such a powerful medal when somebody gets that tied around their neck.
Yeah, I want to just tell everybody, joining me here today, Dr. Brian Mark Rigg, and by the way, the author of more than one book, the author of more than one conversation, you know, you'll be able to take a look at the body of his work. We'll let you know how to do that, how to find him. You know, everything from looking at Hitler's Jewish soldiers, additional books on World War II and the Holocaust, and then his latest book, which I totally relate to, being in this group of people, conquering learning disabilities at any age. So clearly for you, a life path that you have laid out is a life path of really looking at how these folks who otherwise may go unnoticed in the world, but then show up. You know, they show up in a way, and we step back from it, and we think about this. But, you know, we're talking about flamethrower, right? Iwo Jima Medal of Honor recipient, U.S. Marine, Woody Williams, and the note that, I don't know, a controversial award. How so? How so controversial?
Well, you know, this is one thing I really did a deep dive into is, like, how do we make our heroes? How do we give this medal? And, you know, Commandant of the Marine Corps, who's my mentor, and he also endorsed the work, 29th Commandant of the Marine Corps, Al Gray, said, Brian, you've educated me more about how medals of honor were given during World War II and just given, period, than any other person I've read. And so I'm that's a badge of honor that I do wear. So Now getting to your question, why is this a controversial award for Woody? Well, I did a deep dive into 20 case studies from Iwo Jima. 27 men got the Medal of Honor from Iwo Jima. Woody was one of them. Out of 80,000 men who rotated on and off that island in combat, just kind of put it in perspective.
Wow.
And so as I was looking into Woody's medal, you know, this is a very involved process that when your company commander or your platoon commander puts together the package and pushes it up the chain of command, it has to go through several levels before it ever gets to the President of the United States. So Woody's package was thrown together, in many respects, in a very messy way, but it made it through the regiment level, you know, 3,000 men. It made it to the division level, 20,000 men. It made it to the corps level, which is three divisions, about 60, 70,000 men. And then when it reached the Fleet Marine Force level, Roy S. Geiger, famous Marine Corps general, he and his board realized that what was written up in the sample citation and in the first endorsement letter was not supported by the affidavits. And he and his board then conferred with none other than Pacific Commander, Fleet Admiral Chester Nimitz, and his board, and asked them what they thought about this, and they agreed with Geiger that this package was all messed up, and they were not going to push it forward. They did not sign off on Woody Williams' Medal of Honor package. But they found out in this time period that they might have a chance to figure out why there were so many discrepancies, because Woody's platoon commander had survived the war, but he had not been asked for an affidavit. But he had trained with Woody for 6 months. His name was Lieutenant Howard Chambers. He had commanded the action that Woody was a part of that got him, you know, eventually the Medal of Honor. So they wrote him directly and said, hey, can you help us out with giving an affidavit to clarify the problems here? And he refused to support Woody. He was asked again, and he still refused to support Woody. And 31st Commandant of the Marine Corps, Charles Krulak, who looked over this with me because I was very disturbed by it, if you will, he said, this is messed up when somebody's platoon leader refuses to endorse him. There's something really wrong here. So Geiger was right to stop the process. Well, during this time that they're trying to figure out whether Woody deserves the medal or not, and they put the brakes on it, President Truman is putting a lot of pressure on Secretary of the Navy James Forrestal to get him a live Medal of Honor recipient to award medals to in a Rose Garden ceremony on the 5th of October, 1945. A good feel ceremony, a political, bipartisan, and presidents loved this. But he didn't want to give medals to weeping mothers or weeping widows. He wanted to give it to alive, strong, strapping young men. And so he was putting pressure on Forrestal. Forrestal put pressure on the Marine Corps and Chester Nimitz. And they said, under no circumstances do you push this forward. Well, eventually, they actually pulled it away from the chain of command. Woody's medal never got the endorsement of the Commandant of the Marine Corps at the time, General Vandergriff, or the Fleet Marine Force Commander, General Geiger, or the Pacific Commander, Fleet Admiral Chester Nimitz. And it was fast-tracked in the halls of Washington, and it was politically pushed through. That's why it is such a controversial medal, mm-hmm. because in many respects, under normal circumstances, it appears it should have never happened.
Yeah. And you know what I love about this story? First of all, thank you for shedding some light on this. By the way, thank you for shedding some light across the board on this end of mission, because I was really struck by, I think, one of the first paragraphs in your book, and I will apologize if I actually get the language wrong, but I think your dedication, something like to my sons, Ian, Justin, and even your daughter, I think, was Sophia, you know, may they never have to face another Iwo Jima. However, you know, like if they do, may they be the first to volunteer for such a mission. That is the way my relatives felt as well. Now, many of us know about Iwo Jima. We know about it. How do I know about it? We lost an uncle. We lost an uncle there. And why is it that we don't know enough about what this was about and how significant this was to the war going one way or the other, right? Do you agree that yeah. this was very significant?
Oh, absolutely. A very significant battle. People don't know an awful lot about it. We have to thank, in many respects, Clint Eastwood for making the two movies he did in 2006, Letters from Iwo Jima and Flags of Our Fathers, for getting this story out there. But, you know, the one thing I was shocked, you know, when you ask, why do we not know about this more? Well, one side, our society, in many respects, does not support financially historians.
Right.
You know, a lot of people who do write history books, they are professors, and they have their duties in the classroom, and there's only so much time they can dedicate to doing research. And a lot of times, historians that are out there doing a lot of work, if you read their books, they're taking three or four books and making one out of them. They don't do a lot of historical research. When I went to 18 different museums and archives in five different countries to write this book. I went to Japan. I went to China. I went to Germany, America, and Guam to do this research. And, you know, half of my 3,145 footnotes are from primary sources.
Mm.
And what I was shocked by, Pat, is when I went into the National Archives in College Park, Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C., or the National Archives in St. Louis for the personnel files, quite often when they would bring me the original documents, and sometimes the very high-ranking individuals who were, you know, dictating the strategy of the Battle of Iwo Jima and were key personalities, a lot of times I was looking at documents that hadn't been looked at since World War II. How do I know this? Many of the documents were actually still in the envelopes, the manila envelopes stapled shut with the seal on it, top secret from 1945. And I had to go to the main archivist to hopefully open this up, and they did. They take the staples out and then let you look at the documents. So when you ask, why do people not know about this more? Well, first of all, a lot of the primary sources aren't looked at enough, and some of them haven't even been looked at, and we don't have a society that supports the culture of getting that history out. There is so much to be had learning about this history. Now, saying that, we do have a lot of books out there, nonetheless, and we do have a lot of people who are researching it, but we definitely need more. Me finding out all this 70 years after the fact shows you that there's a lot to be done, but, you know, nonetheless, when you go to Barnes & Noble and so on, there's a lot of books on this, but there should be more, and there should be more events like what happened yesterday when I was in Washington, D.C., to see Woody lying in honor in the rotunda of the Capitol.
Yeah.
Symbolic of all the sacrifices that men and women did during World War II, getting that in the news. This is another way of getting that information out there. But, you know, I'm the first one in 70-plus years to sit down and actually write about an enlisted man, a true biography of an enlisted man from World War II, John Hoffman, who was the former head of the Historical Division of the Marine Corps and famous author of Chessie, said that my work was the first good faith effort to document an enlisted man from the Marine Corps from World War II. Now think about that. You had almost 600,000 enlisted men in the Marine Corps during World War II. I'm the first one to really write a biography. So there's a need to do a lot more. You know?
No,
it kind of reminds me of E.B. White, who said, every morning I wake up, and there's a side of me that wants to save the world, and there's a side of me that wants to enjoy it, and it makes the planning for the day difficult. So with me, you know, same thing with history. Every day I wake up, I was like, man, there's 30 or 40 books I could write that need to be written, but I'm only one person, so I'll focus on one.
Well, yeah, I love that because, you know, I faced that myself. You know, I faced that same question. You know, there's some days you wake up and I want to save the world. Of course, with the network, you know, that we built here and our expansion, you want to do that. On the other hand, you just want to be of the world. And it really is interesting to have that go through. But look, you're on a mission with this book. I mean, one of the things Woody has said to you is you have to be absolutely factual. And for people that are just tuning in, you know, I let's take a moment. I thought about this today, and I thought, wow, what if we had done this interview a month ago? You know, might Woody have been here? What if? But the thing I love about what you're doing, and which is so important for us to remember, you know, we are battling the backlash of large groups of people that don't believe the Holocaust even existed, don't even believe it, and don't quite understand what was at risk at Iwo Jima. Let's talk about Woody for a minute, because this book is called, and let's just make sure everybody knows, this book is called Flamethrower, and this is about Iwo Jima Medal of Honor recipient, U.S. Marine Woody Williams, and you are, Brian, you're the author of this. Let's take a minute, if we could. How can people get the book, but also how can they find out more about you? Because you've got a bunch of other great books out there.
Well, thank you, Pat. Well, you know, I have a website. It's my name, brianmarkrigg.com. Brian, spelled with a Y like a Yankee, Mark with a K like a kilo, and then Rigg, two G's, R-I-G-G. So people can find about my work that way. They can also put my name into Amazon, and all my books are on Amazon, and Flamethrower is on Amazon, and free medium, Audible book, Kindle, as well as hardback. And then there's a lot of YouTube videos out there if people want to see stuff on my work. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a whole hour on Dateline about Hitler's Jewish soldiers.
Yep.
That is out there on YouTube if people want to find out more about me. So thank you for letting me do that plug, and that's how people can find out about my works and purchase my books if they would like to.
Well, I'm telling you, if people like you don't remind us of where we've been, we're not going to be able to recognize the signs of where we may go again. And this is really this is a plight of history,
yeah.
And that's history untold. You know, if you're not on board what World War II was really about, then you're not going to be able to recognize the signs of this very interesting, almost silent World War III based on the way that war was started. But I want to take a minute. I want to talk about Woody because he did get the award. And people are probably thinking, what are they talking about, Iwo Jima? What did he do? Hello, the book is called Flamethrower. So I want to talk a little bit about this because we did lose a family member here. And, you know, it is one of the places of the war, I think, that is not talked about. We don't talk about what went on in the Pacific. You know, it's almost as if it was like a side dish or something. But, man, it was not, right?
Oh, man, you know, that's one thing that is so I'll take the 10,000-foot view about,
yeah.
You know, this is not a sideshow, and then I'll get to your question about what did Woody do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, it's sad. I've been studying the World War II and the Holocaust since my undergraduate days at Yale University when I was under James Crowley and Paul Kennedy and Henry Turner. And so I've been studying it since 1992. And if you look at World War II, for every book published on the Pacific, you have like 100 published on Nazi Germany and, you know, the fight against the Third Reich and Hitler. And so why the discrepancy? Well, I think the simple reason is this. You had a lot of Jewish scholars after World War II who were alive and living in England and Australia, America, and many who survived and went to Israel. And they wanted to know why the heck that a nation of Beethoven and Bach and Victor Stein and Nietzsche, why were they capable of slaughtering 6 million Jews? And so there was a lot of research, especially with Raoul Hilberg up in Vermont, a World War II veteran, Jewish man, who wrote, you know, The Destruction of European Jewry, and really got it out there in the 50s and 60s, and there was this intellectual community that really was diving into the documents and getting books published. Now, with Japan. Japan, a lot of people don't realize this, they slaughtered 30 million people, civilians, mostly Chinese, and they did it the old-fashioned way with bayonets and disease and bullets, and they were horrific. They raped everywhere. Rape of Nanking, some people know about, is endemic of everywhere they went. You have books written about rape of Hong Kong, rape of Beijing, and so on. So after the war, because most of the most of the victims were Chinese, you would think China would have been the perfect place to do most of the research and get this information out there. Well, unfortunately, you have a civil war going on in China. The nationalists lose by 1949. The communists take over. Mao Tse-tung is slaughtering more of his own people than the Japanese ever did. And he's killing the intellectual people who would be the ones writing the history. So it's very hard to point the finger at Japan to get this information out there when you're doing it to your own people and you're killing the very people who could actually write it up. So that's one reason. Also, we're a European nation in many respects, so we're kind of European-focused instead of Asian-focused, so there was less interest in it. But saying this is why there's not a lot more information out there. Saying all that, the Pacific War was much more complicated, much more difficult to do, and it deserves more attention because it was remarkable what we did of taking down Hirohito's regime that had taken over one-seventh of the circumference of the earth, and it was commanding over 600 million people. Hitler only commanded over 450 million people. So the Japanese regime was bigger, stronger in many respects, and it was spread over a lot more area, and that our Navy was able to power project across the Pacific. And we started out with 350 ships. We ended with 8,800. It's like, don't mess with us. You kick us off, we're going to come at you. And so that was one, this amazing amphibious warfare and power projection that America was able to do on two fronts, in Europe and in the Pacific, was remarkable. And when you look at the naval and Marine Corps amphibious warfare capabilities in the Pacific, it is remarkable from a strategic point of view and a military point of view. Now getting to Woody being part of this puzzle. Woody was a demolition expert. That means he knew how to blow up stuff. He knew how to deal with all types of explosives. He knew how to deal with a flamethrower. And now why was the flamethrower so important? Well, the Japanese in World War II, quite often, they were not on the islands that we attacked. They were in the islands. They were incredible moles or ants, if you will, and they would build these elaborate structures of tunnels and pillboxes. And on Iwo Jima, which we're talking about, it was an 8 square mile with 11 miles of tunnels interconnected with 5,000 reinforced positions of caves and in pillboxes and bunkers. So Woody, being a flamethrower expert quite often, was utilized to attack these positions because you couldn't blow them up, you couldn't shoot them. The only way to attack these positions, because they were in the ground, was to go up to them and pour flame into them. Now, the flamethrower, Woody was 160 pounds, 5'5", so have that in your mind when you realize that he carried 100 pounds of gear in a battle. Two scuba tanks, if you will, full of fuel, of 4.5 gallons of diesel and high-octane aviation fuel, with a center tank of compressed nitrogen. And then he had a wand that was connected to that that could spray out flame 20 yards in front of him, and wide is about 20 yards as well. And it was 3,500-degree heat. It hit a body, and within 2 or 3 seconds, all the moisture was out of the body, and the body was on fire. One-third of the 20,000-man garrison of the Japanese had at Iwo Jima were incinerated. They were burned alive or suffocated because of the flames, because that was the only way to kill them. Now, Woody, being a demolition expert, the second day he was on the island, his company commander came to him and said, hey, we're getting slaughtered here. We can't get through this line. It was right north of the first airfield. There's pillboxes and trenches all over the place. Do you think you could take some of them out with a flamethrower? Woody said he would try. And he went into battle with these 100 pounds of gear. and he actually took out, you know, 2, 3, possibly 4 pillboxes, and he killed at least, you know, probably 8, maybe upwards to a dozen Japanese, and they were able to punch through this line and go several hundred yards forward. And that's why he got the Medal of Honor, and that was an example of hundreds of guys doing the same stuff on Iwo Jima in order to take over this island, to get the stepping stones, once again, with amphibious warfare and power projection, getting the stepping stones to get closer and closer to Japan.
Yeah, I'm so glad you talked about that in that way. And, you know, we have seen Woody, for those of you out there that have not, you know, we've seen Woody walk on football fields. We've seen Woody, you know, being recognized here. But what we don't know is the story that is being told right now in this book. And if you're somebody like me, you understand that you have, you know, you have dad born in Norway, right? My adopted father born in Norway. Him and his brothers enlisted, and they end up over in the Pacific, and you could not get any of them to talk about it. The only remnants we have of this is a sword, Japanese sword, and a Japanese gun, right? To this day, we still have those. But to have a conversation about this and the loss of his brother, have a conversation of what went on in the Pacific, you couldn't get him to talk about it. And we learned early on it was too painful, and the loss of his brother. And so, see, this is the part that we just don't remember. We don't remember the why. Now, Woody is a perfect example of somebody that looked like the guy from Captain America before he became Captain America, right? You know, right? But this war, had it gone the other way, and this is what folks don't know. I mean, it may sound gruesome to those of you listening, but this is war. If you don't think that something similar isn't going on right now in the Ukraine, I just want you to say hello to yourself. Had we not have been able to take the edge, you and I would probably be having a very different conversation, wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we were isolationists at the time. We didn't want to get involved with the war. And in many respects, the world needs to thank Japan for their idiotic decision to attack us at Pearl Harbor, because there was no strategic follow-up plan. And it awoke, you know, the giant, and we started supplying, you know, Europe in droves. And then Hitler, a few days later after Pearl Harbor, declared war against us. And it turned us from an isolationist country to a country very determined to defeat these two fascist warmongers, Hirohito and Hitler. And had we not gotten involved, millions more people would have died. Europe would have come under the shadow of Hitler, no doubt.
Yeah.
So the world needs to thank us in many respects for bringing down these two regimes, because they were not doing humanity any favors.
You know, you and I could probably do a whole show. Who is it? Yamamoto. I think it was Yamamoto. I apologize if I get my names mixed up. But I remember, you know, studying this in depth about Pearl Harbor and the difference between where you and I are today and a decision that a fleet admiral made not to do a third wave on Pearl Harbor is the conundrum of the century for war people to look at. When a war strategist look at this, everybody scratches their heads. They don't quite understand why the Japanese, in a perfect position, didn't finish the job. And I'm very grateful they didn't, because when we're thinking about this, you have to flip it over to some of the other strategies that Japan put in place for World War II. And Iwo Jima was one of them. You know, when you were describing Iwo Jima, I couldn't help but think of Vietnam. I just couldn't. Because if you know people that have gone through Vietnam, and we know what happened in Vietnam, Iwo Jima was the same setup. I mean, it's not like you were fighting somebody that was just landed on the beach. They were there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and one stat that people just find horrifying is that we lost 7,000 Marines in 36 days of combat. We lost more American boys on Iwo Jima in just 1 month than we have lost servicemen and women in Afghanistan and Iraq in the last 30 years.
Yeah, my uncle was one of them. I totally agree.
Yep.
Look,
and his name?
John, Bjorn, John, Pete. I wish I had more time. These were people, so let me just talk about this. You talk about enlisting. These people were born, like, in another country, and they're like, we have to fight for the United States. So we don't talk about that enough. But this is about Woody, and this is what I want to say. I hope you keep taking this word out. I hope you take the word out about all your books. I hope you remind people over and over and over again what a slippery slope this is. Because if we're not reminded of this, we can't even be aware when the insidious nature of this kind of atrocity starts creeping in. I want to thank you for today. I got one question again for you. Please let folks know how they can get the book. I could talk to you for hours about this. Everything is in the book. I love that you put pictures in the book. Everything is here. You laid this out so beautifully. You kept your promise to Woody to make it factual and yet make it very intriguing, interesting, and deep-heartedly sad. So thank you for all of that. How can we get a copy of the book? And again, how can we find out about you? And then my last question is, I'd love to know your personal message.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, you know, they can get my book on Amazon, you know, a flamethrower. Here again, three mediums, Audible, Kindle, and the hardback. My name again is Brian Mark Rigg. They can get more information about my books with my website. And my personal message, you know, especially with everything that we're talking about, is like, get involved. Freedom is not free. Democracy is nurtured by people stepping up and making this world a better place, whether that be coaching a little league team and teaching people about teamwork, or whether it's getting on your school board, or in retirement, maybe going and teaching. Just get involved. Be proactive. Be an actor. Don't be a critical analyst about things. You see the problem, go get involved, get your hands dirty. And that's what the generation of World War II has taught me. Getting involved and making a difference makes this country stronger, and that's what we should do.
Dr. Brian, thank you so much for this. Thank you so much for really bringing out this information. Thank you for honoring those that have served. And thank you for reminding us how close we do come on a daily basis to reliving something that none of us want to relive. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, Pat, for having me. Have a great day.
You too. Hey, everybody, let's take a short break.
You show with me, your host, Leah Rowling. Do you believe you are capable of choosing your future? Sometimes it takes just one person to believe in you for you to believe in yourself. If you find yourself continuing to say, someday I will take better care of myself, only to continue living the same day over and over and over again, then you, my friends, are in the right place. I am your biggest cheerleader, inspiring you to become you on purpose and with intention. Are you ready to create a life you love? I'm excited to share with you some big ideas that you can use today to inspire, impact, and influence your life and everyone in it. The Becoming You Show starts now. I wanted to share something just real quickly with you. I just got back from an amazing conference in Washington, D.C. I had the honor of speaking at the IAOCI World Congress. It's an international congress for dentists. And it was amazing to meet so many people from all over the world. And interestingly enough, regardless of their degrees and certifications and successes, they too are human. They have human brains that doubt themselves, that create unnecessary struggle and emotional overwhelm. They get stuck. They sabotage themselves. They live in scarcity. I'm telling you, we cannot outrun this human thing. So we better get good at understanding it. I often wonder why people don't want to learn about themselves. I have some theories, of course. First, I believe it's because we are too busy in our roles, in our identities, that we've lost sight of who we are, and self-discovery seems like a waste of time or a foreign concept, nothing that we have time for today. Maybe when the kids graduate, maybe when I retire? Maybe when? We find ourselves looking for proof and ways that that when will reveal itself. The second reason I think that we don't take the time to really learn about ourselves is because we can't unknow it. Once we know it, we can't unknow it. A decade ago or so, I was at an integrated holistic medicine conference in California, and I learned all sorts of really cool things about food and toxins and metaphysics and the emotional language of our body and clearing effects and some really cool, amazing things. And once I learned those things, I can't now unknow them. I can choose to disregard them. I can choose to dismiss them. I can choose not to adhere to them, but I can't unknow. This new knowing requires, for most of us, change. And we don't like change, especially when it requires a change for ourselves. In talking at the workshop, it became really apparent that dentists know a lot about dentistry, but not about themselves. They know very little about the human that resides as a dentist. I feel that is so true for so many of us. We all know the skill of our profession better than we know how it feels in skin. We know the art of motherhood and fatherhood, but do we know who we are in absence of this hood? We know our roles as daughters and sons and sisters and brothers and wives and husbands, but who are we in our role of self? What does that even look like? Friends, we are not our roles. We are not our identities. We are not our profession. And when we lose ourselves in them, we lose ourselves. It is why so many of us struggle when we become empty nesters, because we don't know who we are if we're not being a mom. So many struggle when they retire because they don't know who they are if they're not their profession. So many struggle when they quit their career to stay home with their children and they can't identify as anything other than just a mom. When for so long they were an employee, they were a boss, they were a team leader. So who would you be if you weren't being a mom? Who would you be if you weren't being a dentist or a doctor or an attorney or a hairstylist or a lawyer or a teacher or whatever it is that you do for your job? Who would you be? You would be you. And I'm going to take an interesting twist on our specific role as a mom today and show you how to rediscover yourself in it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So let's talk about how we might be able to wear these same mom hats to support our best being. So the first role, first hat that I feel like I wear as a mom is a taxi driver. Shuttling to and from activities, sporting practices, games in school, and play dates is no joke. Like getting three boys in baseball, in and out of the car, should be an Olympic sport. But where am I driving me? Where am I headed? Do I know? Do I have an end in mind? What do I want for my life? Or have I just been too interested in the life of my kids to want anything for mine? Chef, seriously, I swear my boys are always eating. It feels like every time I look, they are in the pantry. Finding a time that we can all sit down and eat like a family are few and far between. What to eat? seems to be the question, regardless of how well we planned the weekend before. Coordinating food around their schedules, their likes, and their preferences seems obvious. But is it obvious for you? Do you coordinate food around your schedule according to your likes and your preferences? Or do you eat what they eat? Because that is what they like. Do you enjoy your food? Or do you serve it behind the island so that you can be available to get them refills and seconds? And don't get me wrong. You will find me behind the island many a night. But it's interesting, right? Shouldn't I like what I'm eating? Shouldn't I be allowed to sit and eat and enjoy my food without the frenzy of the anticipation? I'm a personal shopper. That's what us moms are. Of course, along with shopping for the groceries, someone has to make sure that they have the right sports gear, baseball to football to basketball, the right seasonal gear. We have all the seasons in Iowa. So winter coats, hats, gloves, to jackets, shorts, t-shirts, plenty of socks, because they inevitably go missing, and that all of the kids' shoes fit. Not to mention the random, very random, like two times a year random, where they actually have to wear something other than a shirt and sweatpants. Packages flood my doorstep for prepper try-on and inevitable return. How can the Nikes run so different from shoe to shoe? But regardless, the level of organization required to ensure that they have everything for everything is nothing short of miraculous. But do we make sure we have what we need? Now, this might look different. It might look like organizing outings with friends. It might look like planning trips or experiences or massages, spa time. Maybe just a new pair of runners for you. It might look like 10 minutes of peace and quiet outside of the shower and the bathroom. What does it look like for you to ensure that you have what you need? Wardrobe assistant is another role that us moms play so well. And luckily for me, dressing boys, pretty easy. They're not too picky unless they were hoping for that one sweatshirt or that one shirt. And you get that shout out, Mom, you know the one, as if I'm a mind reader. Do you know where that one shirt is? And for some reason, it didn't get cleaned in between the commuting from practice to practice and making dinner and doing baths and making sure that homework is done. Sometimes finding clothes that aren't too tight, that aren't too itchy, seems impossible. Or when you ask, what's the matter with that one? They're like, oh, I don't wear that. To which I say quietly to myself, I'm quite sure that was in the laundry last week. But sometimes they need help dressing for certain important occasions. And there is nothing that you won't do to make sure that occasion is successful. Do you hold the same standard for yourself? How do you dress you? What care do you take in getting ready? Again, there's no judgment here. Just an awareness of how we're showing up for ourselves. There are plenty of days, trust me, where my hair is up in a hot mess and I'm wearing the same pair of black pants from the days before without even looking in the mirror. Probably not my best idea. We are also nurse. With boys, there is always something to worry about, a bruise to examine, a bug bite to question, a scrape to kiss. The list is endless. I am the administrator of the medicine, the one on hold for the on-call nurse, the late-night fever checker, all wrapped into one. How do you nurse yourself back to life? Do you allow yourself to be sick, or do you push through because you can't afford to be sick? You don't have time to be sick. Consider, we would never tell our kiddos, you know what? You don't have time to be sick today. Get up and figure it out. Yet how often do we tell ourselves that? Just told myself that last week. We are counselor. All these new emotions, experiences, and fears and adventures call for a good listening ear to sort through all of the feelings. Before becoming a parent, I didn't realize that I could ruin someone's life by asking them to put on a winter coat. It is my goal to be the type of mom in which my boys can come to me and talk to me about everything. I want to listen intently to their worries and their wins. My hope is that home is always their safe landing place. And if I make them feel safe with the small stuff, my hope is that they will share with me the big stuff. But are you a safe landing place for you? The place where you can go to sort through all of your emotions, your experiences, and your fears? Are you listening to your worries? Are you celebrating your triumphs? Or are you just talking about how you could have done it better, differently, and ruminating on all the losses? We are also referee. Sibling battles are real. And amongst boys, they can be brutal. I fearlessly dive in and I separate everyone. We listen to both sides and help them work through the struggles to come to some sort of compromise, at least most times. Some days it feels like this is all we accomplish. We deserve whistles. But are you being the referee between your ego and your soul? You know the ego. It yells things like, it will never work out for you. You can't do this. Some people are just more lucky than I am. Who do you think you are for trying that? No way. Not for you, the ego says. I don't know how, the ego says, just to make sure that you stay confused by it, so that you stay in doubt, in delay, and indecision. Your ego says, I will never fill in the blank. Your ego says, he should be different. She should be different. Your soul says that it will work out and that you can do this and that you are lucky and to never stop trying. You are alive, my friend. You are lucky. Are you calling some fouls and some interference on your ego? Are you protecting your soul from yourself? We are also secretaries, whether it's extracurricular activities or just making sure everyone is staying on schedule with their well visits, their eye visits, their dental exams, their chiro adjustments, their pitching, their batting lessons, getting them to the movies and the mall and picking them up from friends and dropping them off. Are you staying on schedule with your visits? Are you planning things for your physical well-being, your emotional well-being? We're also housekeepers. The daunting pile of laundry that never seems to go away. Yep, we do that. The floors that need scrubbing after the milk is spilled. We got it covered. All those little tasks to keep a house clean are for the most part a mom's job. But your body is your home. How is the upkeep? Are you moving your body? Are you fueling it with nourishment? Are you getting your sleep? Are you taking your supplements? Are you prioritizing and nurturing your relationships? How is the upkeep in your heart, in your head? Is it cluttered or is it light? We're also photographers. A mom is a daily documenter. We take a lot of pictures of our kids and our lives, and we want to soak it all in and remember every little detail. With these photographs, we can look back and relive all the moments. Every year, our family, we create a Shutterfly book of memories, and no doubt, it is their favorite book in the house. But just to add, it doesn't count as their reading minutes. But how are you documenting your life, your goals, your ambitions? Are you journaling your wants, your worries, what you're grateful for? Are you looking at your vision board? Do you make one? Where are your memories? Are you as excited to document your day today? If not, why? Could you be? What would that take? What would that require for you to get just as excited about living your life as you are in documenting your children's? We are cheerleaders. Yes, we are. No one else will love your kiddos like you do. No one else will build them up and stand by their side for everything. A mom's job is to challenge them to be the best that they can be. We give them the encouragement to take risks, with the security to know that they have a safe place to land if they fail. How are you cheering you on? Do you feel safe to fail? Do you feel encouraged to try new things, to be courageous and bold, to put yourself out there without permission or people-pleasing? Are you encouraging and enthusiastic? Do you meet yourself with pom-poms and bada girls? I want you to. Hairstylist. The haircuts, the tangles, the life. Ugh. There should be a special award for moms that have to take care of that. And I will take some bragging rights. I had to do it 3 times in a month. Now, maybe you do make sure that you have your hair appointments scheduled out. But what does that day-to-day hairstyling look like? And I'm not suggesting it should look like anything. I'm not suggesting that you should be spending the time to get ready, the whole hair and makeup and wardrobe thing, but do you want to? What would make you feel better, more confident, more put together? If the answer is yes, maybe you prioritize just a few minutes to do just that in the morning. We are professional party planners. We are. Baptisms, communions, birthdays, all the unique things that make each holiday special do not happen by themselves. Behind each and every great party is a mom that has racked her brain and hours on Pinterest for the best ideas. A mom who has coordinated the food and has made sure the decorations were hung up just so. A mom who lost countless hours of sleep to make that day special. Are you making your day special? Are you taking time to truly celebrate you, your birthday, Mother's Day? What are you doing to ensure that you are celebrated? I love my birthday, and for those of you that know me, know that I celebrate the entire month. I love my birthday month. I love having all of my favorite people there to celebrate, celebration of my family and friends with my favorite food. It truly is one of my favorite days of the year. We're professional organizers. Organizing the wardrobe is just one teeny tiny aspect of the day-to-day organizational skills that we possess. Everything in our house needs a place. All the projects need to be filed into what is kept and what is stored in the recycling bin. Trinkets and toys need to be stored away so that our house doesn't look like it's filled with the toys when we all know that it is. But beyond the physical things that we organize, we keep a detailed list of so many important things. We know who needs what each day. We know whether it's day 1 or 6. When is library day? Is it lunch, hot, cold? Is it banned? Who acts silly and runs around the house naked when they're overly tired? Who needs quiet time? We can hear the signs of an all-out war miles away and have already planned out the rescue. Are you organizing you, your life, your priorities, what you like to do? If I looked at a planner, would I be able to tell how you take care of you, how you love you, how you matter, what you need each day? Do you know when you need a break, when you need to check in with yourself? Are you applying the same standard of care for yourself? Most people would say not even close. Could you today take just one of the many jobs we do as moms or caretakers and see if you can't apply the same care and commitment to yourself. Being a mom is not easy, but generally nothing worthwhile is. Being you is no different. It takes some attention. It takes some intention. But there is no greater purpose. You are the purpose. Thanks for being with me today, everyone. If you like this episode, would you do me a huge favor? Would you share it with some of maybe your favorite moms? Maybe you celebrate them in honor of all of these roles they play and hope that they take one of these roles and apply with the care and the commitment that they give to their children to themselves. We all need our youest you to be expressed and to be given out into the world. Our purpose has social impact, and it's important that we take the time to cultivate who it is that we are and share our gifts freely in the world. And we can't do that if we are stuck in the roles of mom, as dentist, as hairstylist, as attorney. I want you to be the greatest version of you. So please share this with three of your very favorite moms in the world. And if you want to take what you learn on this podcast and 10x level your learning, I would invite you to join our Becoming group. It is an online community of amazing, fabulous women just like you. You can join us at www.leahrowling.com/becoming. This community needs you.
You have been listening to the Becoming You Show with me, your host, Leah Rowling, where I share big ideas to inspire, impact, and influence your life. Tune in every Friday at 11 Central on TransformationTalkRadio.com for your morning cup of coffee, the hug you never want to end, and that inspirational message that you felt was written just for you. Each show is inspiring you to become you with purpose and intention. For more information or to connect with me, visit www.leahrowling.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Tuesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update. For around the sound, we have a collision on State Route 167 northbound at milepost 4.5 around 76th Avenue East. Not too long ago, so bring your patients along with you. Again, the collision on 167 northbound at milepost number 4.5 around 76th Avenue East. But that's right. Stay tuned, because coming up next, after the news weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, the Dr. Pat Show, Talk Radio to Thrive By, and what we wouldn't have done without you. More on that after news weather on the Dr. Pat Show.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. There's speculation President Biden will declare a climate emergency while in Massachusetts tomorrow. The White House says Biden will speak on the climate crisis and seizing the opportunity of a clean energy future to create jobs and lower costs for families. Tucked into the latest border report is the admission that federal agents caught six people in June that were flagged on the terror watch list. Former Border Patrol Chief Victor Manjarrez says this is a huge deal.
There were over 200,000 arrests, and they know of six. What got away?
He now teaches at the University of Texas in El Paso and says the so-called getaways pose a larger national security threat. The six illegal immigrants who were flagged in June bring the total to 56 for the current fiscal year. That's nearly double the 30 who were caught in the previous 4 years combined. The Secretary of State is releasing the annual global report on human trafficking.
It assesses how 188 countries and territories, including the United States, are preventing trafficking, protecting victims,
Speaking at the State Department, Antony Blinken called trafficking a terrible and vast crime. He said roughly 25 million adults and children are currently victims of trafficking in the world. Human trafficking is sometimes referred to as modern slavery. Blinken said government corruption in some countries enables traffickers. He also noted that climate change is accelerating instability in many nations, making more people vulnerable. Fans of The Godfather are hearing quite an offer. Lisa G reports.
Actor Marlon Brando might be saying this about an offer on a website.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
A 1930s mansion on Staten Island, featured in the iconic movie's opening scene, is now listed on Airbnb. It's undergone some renovations and now has 5 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms, a basement pub, game room, and a saltwater pool. It's available for up to 5 guests for 30 nights for only $50 a night. Lisa G, New York.
You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Our U.S. medical system is the world's best for trauma. It can also extend our final years, even if we're in a sad state. But the system is just not good at keeping us in balance and preventing disease. I'm certified clinical nutritionist Marty Whittaker. On Healthy by Nature, our experts help you feel your best and stay healthy.
Healthy by Nature, Thursdays at 7 a.m. Learn more at hbnshow.com. That's hbnshow.com.
Want to promote your business uniquely and effectively? KKNW is the answer. Let us help you produce a professionally sounding radio show or podcast. Learn more at 1150kknw.com. KKNW, talk variety that's live and local.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Tuesday. Sunny skies again today. High temperatures around 77, 78 degrees. Tonight, clear skies and cool. Low temperatures dropping back down to about 57. For Wednesday, Thursday, and running up to the weekend, more sunshine expected. High temperatures in the upper 70s to low 80s. Mostly clear skies through the overnight. Lows hovering in the upper 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring. And coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. And by the way, we got a great show for you today. But I have to really have a conversation with Benny and Micah. Mostly Benny, though, before I introduce the most incredible.
I may not have anything to offer then, Pat.
Okay,
it might be all Micah.
I got to ask you about this.
All right, go for it. I know, right?
Okay, so today's very special guest, Julie O. Rose and JoJo Rose,
mm-hmm.
Spacious
mm-hmm.
Unknowing Network. Mm-hmm. But before we get to them, and believe me, what I'm about to say does tie into this, because this is what I've learned from them. This is what I've learned from them. So I'm watching. I told you yesterday on the show I'm a closeted track and field person, right? Okay. I would have so liked to be, like, in the whole track and field arena, but honestly, they had to pull me to get to first base playing softball. They're like, you have to hit the ball so far out just to get to first
base. Yeah, you're that dedicated athlete.
It's just,
yes.
It's just, that is not for me. That's
pure
not
dedication.
My strength.
Pure dedication.
But I can move on the table tennis court, but you know what? It's talking about run. So here's the thing that I really come from yesterday. Now here's what I'm learning, and this is what I've learned from both Julia Rose and JoJo Rose in the time I've been working with them. And by the way, Spacious Unknowing and Spacious Unknowing Network, it's amazing. You're going to hear about it today. But here's what I learned. When we allow Benny, Micah, technology to make important decisions for us without using our own logic, free will, common sense, you will create a situation like we had in track and field. Yes, I got to bring this up again because it's one thing for us to understand that, yes, in sports, it is very, very good to have these electronic devices. And like when they're swimming at the Olympics, the finger touches, great. However, I will say this. Devon Allen did not know when he, and it's not just him, the other two runners as well. This is so important to today's show because it is a reminder for us as we launch our network. When we let technology down to .001 of a second, because this guy is that fast out of the blocks. So when we allow .001 to have a bell go off, that people, judges, everybody's watching, they don't use their brain. They just don't stop for a minute and say, great, technology is great, but you know, the dude is really fast. He's always going to do that. .001 of a second changed the destiny for this man. Mm. But I want to talk about this in the spacious unknowing framework. Not that I know how to do that, but I want to talk about it. Because now there are three of them, two women and this gentleman. Now, the two women where it happened, one in particular, and I have to look up her name, came back to qualify for another race yesterday. But her case was even worse. Why? Because the electronic thing flagged her after the gun went off, right? So think about this. So ask yourself the question in the realm of being. Is it time for us to have a change in the way we integrate our lives, our principles, our values with technology? Now, yes, I'm going to that global place because I am affected by my two guests today and working with them. Because if technology makes these decisions without consideration for what really does happen, imagine how many more Devon Allens there'll be. Now, clearly, I will tell you this. I know the universe and the God of my understanding is so much smarter than any of us. And I knew, like, when the women went through this, there was a message that something had to change. But you see, it wasn't powerful enough. They didn't get enough attention to say, we have to change the rules in track and field. We have to do something different here. We cannot have electronics determine somebody's fate. These people struggle and work hard. But it had to be this guy, his last race ever, as he goes on to play for the Philadelphia Eagles. This is a man that struggled. He lost his dad. This was his last race, .001 of some electronic device. It didn't even say he left the gate. It said his reaction was too fast. So here's what I know in a conversation today with Julio and Jojo. They live in the realm of spacious unknowing, and you're going to hear about it today. Because in the realm of spacious unknowing, it allows for us, for the soul, for something to come forward despite technology, despite what may be happening on YouTube, despite a .001. But I don't think that the changes to the rules or the guidelines, just like we're about to talk about today, the transformation of us, the ascension of us, our being, it comes from people like Julio and Jojo Rose, who are willing to come out and be bold. Now, Devon Allen will be remembered for this race, but he'll also be remembered for the man that put into motion major, major changes in the entire field and track arena. See, that's what catapults us to change. That's what spacious unknowing allows us to know. Today, I want to introduce you to two people I have had the pleasure and honor of working with side by side. I love their show. I love the way they're doing it. They are writing their own script. These are folks that are going to talk to us about the universal alchemical solvent love, what it means to open the portal. Because what is happening with Devon Allen right now? Why is he receiving flowers? Why is he receiving? What is happening? What about the love that is being poured out for these athletes right now? Now, many of you say, I don't follow field and track. Okay, you don't have to. See, the story is one of each and every one of us. How many times in your lives, and Julie, oh, and JoJo are going to get on this right now, but how many times in your life have you been discarded or disqualified or just dissed because of a .001? Because of somebody that somebody where said to you something that put you in the .0001 category, and it changed your life. Are you ready to recover? We're going to find out today. We're going to find out what Spacious Unknowing is, what Spacious Unknowing Network is, and let me introduce you to two very, very powerful, transformative coaches. I don't even know if they like that term, but people that mentor others on how to enter into the realm. Welcome to both of you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. Aloha.
Aloha. You know, these are events, and the reason I brought this up, because this is an event in someone's life. It's an event that affected him. But we all have events in our lives. That's why the three of us are here. That's why you both are here talking about Spacious Unknowing, right?
Yeah,
because each of us has had that .001 thing where a judgment was made, words may have been spoken. Who knows? I don't know. But what we do with it next is important, isn't it? So let's start by talking about the Spacious Unknowing Network, Spacious Unknowing Network, and the opening in the realm that it contains for anyone that has had a .001 moment in their lives, right? Julio, want to start? Thank you. Julio Rose, JoJo Rose, thank you both. But what do you think about that? Have you had any of those .001 moments?
We've talked a lot about technology this week. Yeah. For us, it's watching family to sit at a table for dinner in a restaurant and on their phones.
Oh.
All of them. Five of them. Four of them. Two of them. It's really taken over a lot of people's lives. So for us, that's a big change from what certainly we knew earlier on in our lives.
And go ahead, sorry.
Communication. There's no communication. There's no working of the inner workings. And so Spacious Unknowing has to do with our inner workings and the path to consciousness that is available to each of us. And it's so wonderful. And I appreciate technology to the limit. But I also feel that we have to be very much more aware of the inner workings in our lives and have them manifest in the world in ways that are beneficial to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, the reason that I brought that story up is it didn't happen yesterday. It actually happened a couple of days ago. But it really got me to think because a couple things happened over the weekend. I'm working on the upcoming workshop that you're going to be, I call it a workshop, but what you're preparing, what you're bringing out into the world. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking 5 years ago, even if we had not had the vision 15 years ago to develop a technology that literally the other higher level technologies weren't ready for. So we have to have a vision of that. And I want to talk with each of you about this because, you know, the young man I'm talking about and the two other women, you know, one of them did move on in another event, but their lives were changed because a human being did not stop and say, oh, her foul happened after the gun. Okay, right. I mean, think about this, right? I mean, it's close to absurdity, isn't it? Well, in the world of Spacious Unknowing and the Spacious Unknowing Network, I want to ask each of you, What does it allow for us? And how has creating this carved a pathway for you in your life?
It calls for peace and be still and recognize the voices of other people. Listen, if I listen in, I'm going to listen better to someone who's speaking to me. It just all goes together with what you're saying. There, if there's no recognition of being able to see and listen, people make in major errors, and it affects so many people's mm-hmm. lives. So for me, it's really a way to, whatever happens in our world, instead of reacting, responding by being still for a few minutes and knowing how to move or say whatever needs to be said, because it isn't just a snap thing or a reaction or a knee jerk or whatever it's mm-hmm. called. I know how important it is to be in an unknowing place for knowing to arise. Mm-hmm. And that knowing is our soul. And it really does speak to us. It speaks from us. And we're in our lives in ways that are, there's no separation between me and anyone else, nature, the whole universe, the galaxy, the cosmos. We're here with all of that inside of us. We're all made of the same thing. And so there's nothing that is outside of our venue of understanding. Mm-hmm. That's the way I would say it.
Yeah. And JoJo, how about you? Because both of you are on this journey together. I just want to say for those of you just tuning in, and yes, of course, we did skip the break. So for those of you tuning in, I'm introducing you to two amazing women. And when I say amazing, how do I know that? Did I just wake up? No. I've been working with them for several months now. I got to fully lean in and understand at a level that I don't know that I could even explain. And I still don't know that I completely understand spacious and knowing. All I know is the world needs it. And I've watched both of these amazing women work together. Of course, Julia Rose is founder of Spacious Unknowing Network, and the conscious of being conscious expert, creator of Change of Course. And then JoJo is the initiate of Spacious Unknowing Network, creator of Breath Break Meditations. But together, when you put them together, it's so much more powerful than words can explain. JoJo, for you, you've taken this journey. You've been right there, but let's hear your perspective on this.
Yeah. You know, thank you, Dr. Pat. I am an initiate of Spacious Unknowing Network. What that means to me is that I'm learning every single day, every single day. And rather than look to another human being, listening to others, wanting others to make decisions for me, I'm learning to really come in, come home to my heart, and recognize that we all impact one another. Being in this talk show with Julia Rose, all of the things that I'm learning just in the talk show that involve technology and involve communication really call on me to be in that place of spacious unknowing network and not knowing and being okay with that, being okay and comfortable in the stillness to know that I don't know, but I sure would like to know, and really embracing the art of learning every day.
And I think that's why we're having this conversation because, you know, first of all, there's no mistake about the timing of meeting you, of you saying yes to bring Spacious Unknowing Network to the world. There's absolutely no time. This is really an energy that is being called forth. And what I love about this and talking with you about this energy is it brings out perhaps things in all of us, especially the people that watch the show, but in each of you. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the things that have emerged, at least for me and knowing you. For example, the Spacious Unknowing Network meditation, the sacred writings, you know, and I know I'm supposed to ask you this question, like, sacred writing have to do with our inner workings? What does it have to do with our inner workings? But I'll tell you, I have emailed you upon receiving some of these writings, and I have shared with you simply the power of reading four lines, and some of them just crying and not really understanding that. And I want to say that because I would love for you to talk about this, because, see, all of this is converging to come out now, right?
Yes.
And you can't plan this with just your logic. Right, Julio, right?
Never. I say plan to be spontaneous, because that's how it works.
And that's how your show is. It's
yes.
a fascinating show, and I love it. But there's also part of what you're sharing, you know, years of what you've learned. Spacious Unknowing Network and Spacious Unknowing Meditations are powerful, and people are going to hear a lot more about them. But there are also sacred writings, which we're going to be sharing. We're going to share them through the website.
Mm-hmm.
I know personally what they mean, but I want to hear from each of you, Julio, from you, in a sense, because you've written some of them. And JoJo, you've also done this. But for both of you, what is it you feel about Spacious Unknowing Network? What is it you feel about the potentiality to change life? See, that's what I'm interested in today.
Yeah.
Because I know, short period of time with you, I know what has happened for me. But what do you feel about this and the calling to bring it to the world now, Julio, right?
Yeah.
Now for you.
Well, it's important to pass on the real understanding, clear understanding of inner workings, and just be in the consciousness that is opens all the faculties. Everything is alive in this world, in this inner world. And the network of it is our everything works better when we meditate. It just mm-hmm. does. And instead of leaving meditation on a shelf, it's like getting in touch with, feeling the neurons firing, the immune system boosted, everything in us is more alive. Our blood is flowing freely in a way that is healthy. And I could go on and on.
Yeah, you need to go. And please go on. Please go on, because I want people to hear you.
What I've learned from meditation is that a lot of people don't use it to be in the world. And when the listening in with meditation is then used to listen to people, it's a true use of what we're receiving and learning and have the possibility of sharing. So the inner works are so relevant to our life. And with meditation, we can learn them from the feeling, as you're saying, from the feeling nature, where we really understand our inner heartbeat and the sound that made it in the first place in the embryo. If that first sound was mm-hmm. our heartbeat, and it's as potent today for us in meditation and learning about ourselves as it was when we were being birthed or being grown, conceived, all of it. And it for us not to care about learning our inner workings, it's like we're not here. We're not really here. Do we really exist? Maybe. But I feel that we understand better why we're here with the spacious unknowing that allows us to just know. No new things. It's wonderful to have inner knowing. It really is trustworthy. It makes us trustworthy. It's just a wonderful life, and I'd love to pass it on and have people receive and join us in it.
And you are passing it on to JoJo, right?
Oh,
JoJo?
I would love to share a story with
please,
you.
Please, please.
So several months ago, I happened to wake up one morning, went in the bathroom, looked at my eyes in the mirror, and I was devastated. Why was I devastated? They looked dead to me. There was no soul shining through my eyes. And for a long time, they hurt. They were really small and constricted. And in that moment, it was like I gave myself a directive, and I knew that I was going to be in whatever I needed to be in to change my eyes. And I did. I set to work. I was very in. My will was fully engaged with my soul to make this be very different in my life. Concomitant with learning Spacious Unknowing Network and meditation. Fast forward to today, my eyes have changed. Now, my left eye used to not track for a reason. But anyway, it used to not track, so now it's tracking. Does that mean that I stop being in the exercises and being aware? No, because what happens is I can wake up and, or throughout the day, I can go and look at myself in a mirror, and I can tell when something is off because my eyes reflect it. My eyes reflect if something's not right, which gives me a good cue in to pay attention. Okay, what do I need to change right here, right now? And that's all part of Spacious Unknowing, to be that open and that willing to be real with ourselves. And then in the being real with ourselves, we can pass it on to other human beings. My full heart, soulful desire is for human beings to know how much they are loved, to feel that love, and to be willing to share that love. That has been a constant, steady, sure, true thing in my life of how loved I have been, even when I was not willing to understand me. I've always been loved. Every human being and soul on this planet is loved, and I want human beings to feel that.
And isn't that really the essence of what both of you are creating, have created? And I want to tell everybody, if you want to get a glimpse of this, you have to go to this website. You just have to go, because when you go there, tell me if you don't feel something. Call me. And if you're listening and you go to the website spaciousunknowing.com or spaciousunknowingnetwork.com, it'll get you there. Tell me what you feel. Allow yourself to feel it. When you get there and you read some of the things that are here in writing, and there's so much more. There's so much more, which I hope we talk about a little bit. But when you lean into this and you get a sense of it, you will understand why, for the 20 years you've known me, the very first interview I've ever done, I would say to people like Jack Canfield, you know, Jack, I don't know what I don't know, but I want to learn. See, this is what we're stepping into. And I'm just going to tell you this. I don't know when. I don't know how. This will become a movement, because the world is demanding that we, as Einstein said, we don't try to solve the problem at the level it's created. And JoJo, I need to pull that clip and send that to Devon Allen, to the young man right now, that he knows from love, the love of his dad who passed. He knows that more than anything, that 0.001 cannot dismantle love. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, fasten your seatbelt, but also please feel free to call in, not to talk to me, but maybe you have a question for Julie. Maybe you have a question for JoJo. When we come back, get ready to talk about what is identity transformation, and something I am so excited to hear them talk about, personal presence. What? Personal presence. I need to hear this for my upcoming weekend. Benny, Micah, let's take a short break. Everybody, we'll be right back.
Optimize your breast cancer screening without any radiation or pain. Effective, sensitive, and widely used thermal imaging in Europe is now available to you here in the U.S. Using state-of-the-art FDA-approved camera, Eastside's first and only breast thermography clinic is now open in Bellevue. Safe, sensitive, low cost, no referrals needed. Contact Holistic Medical Center at 425-451-0404 or on the web drdarvish.com.
It's time to tap into your divine self through angelic guidance. Join your host, Cindy Smith, and co-hosts in the Angel Empowerment Show from I Can't to I Can, airing every Monday, 6 p.m. Pacific, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn from four of the best angel empowerment practitioners in the field. Together, they will share experiential teachings and offer live, on-air professional angel card readings and much more. For more information, visit CindySmithAEP.com.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Patassa the fourth Tuesday each month at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age that provides truth and answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you monthly on TransformationTalkRadio.com on Knowledge Book Radio. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.com.
Tune in to Awaken Your Magic Within, reveal unconscious systems to discover your unstoppable freedom power. Join me, Tracy Lynn Wallace, on TransformationTalkRadio.com the first Tuesday of each month, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, to gain insight, direction, and tools to uncover limiting beliefs. Get ready to step into your unstoppable power to discover and uncover your magic within.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Everybody, welcome back. Oh, is that? Am I getting an echo on my end, Benny? Is that me?
I don't think so.
I like to hear myself talk in echo.
I love it too.
Double talking.
I'm a big fan.
Is that like talking and then like double talking? You love to hear me talk too, right? Benny and I have been together 20 years. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm saying. I want to welcome everybody back. And again, I want to remind you, whenever we do shows, you know the call-in number, 1-800-930-2819. But see, Micah is also on Facebook. And if you're on Facebook, TransformationTalkRadio.com, post a comment there and Micah will let us know about it. We'll bring it up or post your question. Today, I'm so thrilled to have Julio Rose and JoJo Rose joining me here today. They are the people that have said yes to bringing this out into the world. This is Spacious Unknowing Network. And what that involves, it involves, as Julie, you just said it, it involves us to remember the amount of and bandwidth we have for love. Thank you both for joining me here today. And as I said, go to spaciousunknowing.com, spaciousunknowingnetwork.com. We'll get you there. Take a look. Read some of the writings. There'll be more of this coming. Look at their show. I want to talk with you about what you're getting ready to introduce to people. Because being in the unknowing doesn't mean you don't do anything, right? Yeah. It doesn't mean that. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this idea of personal presence, if we could. and what that has come to mean to each of you and what you're doing to introduce it to all of us. Julie, want to go first? Go ahead.
Sure. Personal to me is oftentimes I see people who are spiritual and they have a presence, but nobody ever wants to talk about the free will we have that we need to connect with this presence. And when we connect our free will to our presence, we're really connecting our wholeness. And it's really powerful because we're present in any aspect of life. Nothing is outside of the realm of possibilities. And so personal, to me, is very important. It isn't about personality. It isn't about ego. In fact, ego usurps the power of the soul and uses the will and holds it in bondage. So it's getting free from the bondage of the will, that is ego, and also the just being able to feel your own personhood. Just know that I have something to offer the world. I care. I am here to pass on knowledge, wisdom, understanding, clear understanding, so that people can tune in. It's a tuning in here and tuning into life, really, and being letting life be an adventure like you're speaking of with what you're entering into with your ping pong, right?
Yeah. Yes, my tournament this weekend.
Yeah. It really is wonderful, and that's what I'm saying. You know, there's no fear inside. There's nothing that would hold us back when we live from this place inside. And we understand that everything that happens in our life, we have the ability to come in and to be personal with ourselves first and understand that unless I understand me and the inner workings of how they work, and the freedom that I have from a free will, that I'm the one who decides how it's used. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who connects with it in such a way that I can have a definitive way to speak to others, but always for them to come into the same mastery of their own personhood, of their own presence in that personhood, and then to manifest what it is that they know they're here for. Yeah. They know they're here for that, whatever that is from the soul. So to bring that from within them, that's really what I'm here for. Mm. I've done this all my life with me, and I've worked with other beings as well, but now I really have given myself wholeheartedly to be with beings who are seeking this, knowing that they need a change in their own lives. And to be personal with people, technology has put people out of touch with each other. And so being personal, looking someone in the eye, hearing their voice on the phone, allowing for our willingness to be present with others,
yeah,
in true way, a real way, by listening, by caring, by showing some human kindness. It's everything.
Mm.
It's really everything.
It is, and it's so powerful. You know, it's really interesting. Jessica and I had to make a really difficult decision in the way we run our offices and our studios. And we really thought about this long and hard, and we've tried many, many ways to get around it. But it talks to something you said before, and then JoJo, I really would like you to jump in on this.
Yes.
It talks to something you said before about our addiction to ourselves. And it is, when you can't go out to dinner with your family and put your cell phone away or leave it at home. And I'm not saying everyone. Some of you are emergency people. Some of you need your phone.
Yeah.
And we tried 100 different ways to Sunday to say to our team, okay, It's okay for you to have your phone here, but please, please try to hold back from doing personal things or whatever you're doing. 100 ways over a 5-year period. And finally, Jessica is like, you know what? No cell phones. Your cell phones, we're not going to go quite as extreme as my friend's company where you have to leave your cell phone at the door. That's what they do.
Right.
But you get to the point where you say, you know what? Just put it away. You don't need it out. Yeah. You don't need to be checking your whatever you're checking, because all of the people we work with, all of our clients, they want us to be present, even if they don't know what they want you to be present for, right? Jojo, Jojo, and let me just turn it over to you, too, because we are talking about personal presence, and this has been a journey for you as well.
Well, it means so much to me because all of what Julie O'Rose just said, I'm learning, and it's such a wonder to be in this life and to understand the importance of personal presence and that anyone and everyone can change. If they know they need to change, change is completely possible. They have to be willing to do and understand their inner workings. They have to be willing to tell themselves the truth. They have to be willing to let their life, what they feel and think inside, show them what needs changing, and to allow what they're seeing, what is life showing them? What is their life showing them? If things keep happening in a certain way, that's usually a sign that we have to bring it home and bring it in. And the only way that someone can do that is with having a personal presence and being willing to speak or be silent, yep. Be however they need to be in any given moment.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Said about identity transformation, because if when somebody can identify the sounds they did make and have made and are still hearing in their head or here, they really have the opportunity to identify with something entirely new. And as they do that over and over, change what the old sounds were, bring in the new sounds, and identify more with this way of life, their identity, they transform through this change of not identifying with things that really made their life miserable, unhappy, just really didn't work for them, but they didn't know what they didn't know, and so it continued until they began to say, wait a minute, I can change this.
Yeah.
I can change this. Yeah. I have to change this. And then the identity begins to automatically change through the inner work they do. It just does. And they find out and go, oh, I don't even think about that anymore. You know, there's small incremental changes, and then all of a sudden there's transformation that they've worked hard inside to get to, inside and the changes they've made around them and in the world. I don't ever want to leave that out because too many do, and I really know how important practical application of everything we learn is. So
it is, isn't it? I mean, and that's really what we're talking about. And thank you for bringing that up because, you know, there is an idea out there, at least that's what I'm familiar with, that there is an idea out there when we talk about things like this that there isn't a practical application. And that is so not true. We are talking about, you know, what it is that we can do to apply things in our lives, to apply things to our world. And I mean, that's why, you know, for those of you out there, if you go to spaciousunknowingnetwork.com, you're going to see a masterclass. You're going to see what Julio and Jojo have created, this personal presence portal director for identity transformation, and then to also understand, you know, what calls you to know what you need to be directive. I mean, it is right there. This is something up and coming from them in the September timeframe. So not only are you hearing about, you know, what is in the heart of what we're talking about, but this is really a masterclass to accept mastery in opening your spacious, unknowing, personal presence portal.
Right? Yes. 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 And it's an accelerated path that JoJo can attest to.
Yes.
And there's others I've worked with in the past, but definitely it's an accelerated path because when they give themselves to it, wow. And honestly, I don't have a magic wand. I tell everyone that I work with that. I don't have a magic wand. I can give you understanding for what is necessary for you to work in and from and by. But unless you do the work, nothing.
And I can attest to that. It wasn't until I fully engaged and made a decision that I was the one, if I wanted this change in my life, she wasn't going to make it for me. You know, Joe over here wasn't going to do it. I had to be willing to face the things in my life that I had let just go and go and go. And when you do that, it piles up. It piles. And so the working of it and the inner workings and understanding help to dissolve and change.
Yeah.
And it is layer by layer. It didn't get there in 1 second. It's not going to change in 1 second. But when you can be so clear in your own soul and have a directive and know what you need and be able to speak into the field of knowing what you need with real clarity, the changes can happen quickly. But you have to stay the course. Yeah. You have to stay the course and be steady in it for that change to be really realized. And
it's so funny you brought that up.
When the change is realized, it automatically comes into your life. The practical application is in the change because you're so in it.
And until someone is in it, practical application is that they see in the world what they're still creating that they can now take home.
Yeah.
So there's always practical application, even when they haven't yet cleared their inner life enough to really clear their life out here. They still are able to learn from the things that are surrounding them, or when they walk out the door, what happens that could upset them, and come back in and say, okay, what is this upset? I'm here. And just be still with it so you know, you find out what's going on in here, what's happening inside of me. And it can be days, it can be a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on what has occurred in this. And what JoJo was saying, I would add that we all have chemistry. Of course, we know about the hormones. But when we are in a prayer, meditation, an inner way of living, alchemy comes in. Well, that's substantial, and it really does. It's part of what accelerates things because it really allows for a new substances become very much part of our form, our mind, our soul, our spirit. And so we really benefit so richly from this life.
Yeah.
The life inside and the life we see out here that shows us, well, we really are in this moment. What's true is that the seemingly unchangeable can be changed.
Wow.
And
I mean,
it's potent.
And let's talk about that from the context of how you both do your show. And I want to mention to everybody right now, you'll be able to find out more. And let me just make sure you all have information. You'll be able to find out more and hear you know, firsthand. And by the way, and participate in this show with Julia Rose and JoJo Rose.
Yes.
I just want to tell everybody, it's Mondays right here on the network, TransformationTalkRadio.com, 7 p.m. Pacific time. And you're going to be able to either listen to it or you can watch it on Facebook. If you've missed any part of anything so far, what I'd like to say to you, just go over to spaciousandknowing.com, click on the podcast button, and there are the shows. And many, many more are to come. And you're going to find when you watch the show, you're going to see something fascinating happen. Can we take a moment to talk about that? Because what you're doing on the show is you're having dialogue, each of you, authentic dialogue. And it's not scripted. We don't know what's coming or how it's coming.
No.
It's very real. And that's what's so very amazing about it, right? JoJo's like, oh, my gosh, yeah, this is true, right? Tell folks about this, because this ties in. This ties into really coming into being with with identity and personal presence, the way that you've said this is the way we're going to do that, right, Julio?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it's fun because we have fun all the time, so why shouldn't we have fun on our show?
But, good point.
Yeah, yes. But I want to add something to that, in that she's always so relaxed and easy and just, the word just flows from her. And for me, I've had to come into that place of relaxation where I wasn't holding on to an idea of, oh, well, we're doing a talk show, so let me get really tight now, because it's like, okay, no, let's have fun with this and let's just be with each other. And it is an organic happening, each show. I mean, yes, we do prep work, but then we allow it to be what it's going to be each show. Yeah.
And, you know, and this is really, for me, when I step back and I think about this, you both walk the talk of spacious unknowing, because you've created this presence. And that's what I love about working with you. See, as a network, we don't have rigidity in creativity with our folks.
No.
Now, there are some things we'll guide you about and some things we'll say. But our job is to create a portal for you to show up as exactly the way you'd like to show up. And that's the most powerful thing, not just about the show, but isn't that what you help other people do?
Yes, and you definitely have that, Dr. Pat, for how we have been with you and you understanding us, and it was such a gift to us, and thank you so much. The best thing we did was get on your website with that JoJo found that you accepted hosts and go right there and write out what we want.
Yeah, we did it right away.
Yes. And it's life-changing, because we wanted to do this, but we didn't know where or how. And when we found you, and I remembered listening to you when I was in the U.S. a lot. And so here we were, okay, this is our place. And we're so thankful for you.
Aww.
I just have to say, you really have helped change our life in the way of us manifesting and being with other beings who can learn about us.
Yes.
That's so, thank you.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's an honor, right, JoJo? You know, it's an honor and
a
process.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely. It is an honor. And it is an honor being with you and learning what we're learning and having your guidance in helping us, as Julio says, to bring this forward, to manifest it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been a long time in the making. Now is the timing of it, though.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask this last question to each of you, because I always like to tell people, what's in your heart? What are you most excited about bringing forward now? You know, of course, there are other things to do, but there's some things that sit in our hearts, I made a major decision over the weekend that I didn't think I'd be making for another month. But it was in my heart, you see. Mm-hmm. And I was working on the masterclass page. And I read something, I can't remember what it was, but I immediately knew the exact date for launching our crowdfund. I mean, it just came to me. So I want you to share, if you don't mind, what's in your heart? What are you most excited about bringing forward?
I want to see people accept love in their heart, in their lives, in their whole being, because it's present and available to all of us. You know, it's like a sweet rain, you know, coming in misty and just really for us, love, lots of love. And we also want to have, as we undergo all of this, is a foundation of some kind that would be left in our wake, so to speak, so that we really, it's a continuum. We're not here for one day or one minute. It's really important to both of us that we have something very special for. We especially love children, and we especially feel that children are not being cared for in a way that they need to be in our culture today.
Yeah.
And so we'd love to start doing something with that as we go in this, and that's in our heart, both of us, very deeply, and work with adults that have children so that, you know, we can bring them together in brand new ways, and that's very, very much integral to how we have been talking and feeling and wanting to bring forth, and we've done this for years, knowing that we would do this someday together, and now it's clearer and more than possible.
Yeah, it's so exciting, and you know, you really, really are talking about something that's so needed now. Jojo, for you, how about you? I mean, the idea of just
listening to her.
I know, I was just too.
That's how I feel, because I want human beings to come home and recognize their soul. What is their soul rhythm? And to know how deeply loved every human soul on this planet is, and that the love is for sharing. And I've worked a lot with children, so my heart is very deep and wide and broad for what children need. And they are so now they have so much to give. And I want to be with them to have them blossom.
This program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle. Want to promote your business uniquely and effectively? KKNW is the answer.